shit. I don't look like the athlete of the day supposed to look. My belly's just a little big. My hand is just a little big. But brother, I am bad and they know I'm bad. And there were two bad people. One was John Wayne and he's dead, brother. And the other was right here.
The Moose, Mark Moses.
American Dream. He's just a common man.
That's right, 12:02 in the a.m. on this early morning. It's been a while. I got to be honest with you. Connor Green across the way, Fliegelman taking over, taking you through the overnight. We're taking you right up until the warm-up show right at 5 a.m. I got to remember the last time I did an overnight. It's probably been about 6-7 years, but it's great to be here. Good to be with you. Al is sick. Got the call from Ryan, saw the tag end coming out of the bullpen about 5-6 hours ago. I said, sure, yeah, let's talk some sports, take you through the overnight. Plenty of your calls at 888-808-1019. Mark Melusis with you right here on the Fan on this late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, however way you want to look at it. And we got a lot to get into. I mean, Eli getting snubbed, Belichick getting snubbed as far as the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We'll get the Knicks and Giannis. Artemi getting benched by the New York Rangers and the brilliance of Chris Drury running the Rangers. And as they took on the Islanders last night, plenty to chat about. And obviously, the mess that is the New York Jets. So let's start with the Hall of Fame. You know, let's start with Eli first and foremost, and then we'll get into Belichick. And there's no argument to be made. Like, there really isn't. And, you know, for Bill Belichick not to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and not to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, really what it does do, in essence, there's, you know, I don't care in today's day and age of being a contrarian, in today's day and age of hot takes when you're looking at certain sports things in order to try and grab attention, especially on social media. You know, there's no real argument to be made. You can't go out there and tell the story of the National Football League, really, historically speaking, and you can't talk about the impact of Bill Belichick. I don't care what he is personality-wise. I don't care if he was likable, unlikable. I don't care how he treated the media. I don't care about Spygate. I don't care about Deflategate. I don't care about any of this nonsense. I really don't. Bill Belichick, for my money, I've watched a lot of football over my years. He's the greatest coach that I've ever seen. He really is. And, you know, that's after watching guys like Bill Walsh and Joe Gibbs and obviously Bill Parcells. You look at the brilliance of Andy Reid with Philadelphia, inability to win the big game and what he's been able to do, the dynastic days with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, what Bill Belichick, and we can get into the old debate in terms of, you know, whether who is more important, the coach or the quarterback, when it talks about the brilliance of the New England Patriots and the dynastic days of New England and all the success that they had up there in Foxborough. You need both. You know, you can't go out there and win championships and have the kind of run New England had without having an all-time great and arguably the greatest ever play the position, you know, at the most important position in all of professional sports, and that is quarterback. And obviously, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, was able to establish the culture and the expectations, the tone, everything that comes along with it, to go along with the brilliance that he was as a defensive mind, to go along with the brilliance in terms of the game planning, what he did as a defensive coordinator assistant here, you know, in New York with the Giants. You know, Belichick's a Hall of Famer. And a first ballot Hall of Famer, and there is a difference. There really is. So for all the Hall of Fame voters out there, and I understand that, you know, this is drawing the attention, you know, what it really does do is it minimizes the institution. It minimizes and takes away from the hall itself. So for anyone that wanted to send, and we can get into the voting procedures, and you could talk about the fact of the restructuring of it, and you have 8 individuals, and you can only cast 3 votes, so what are you going to do in that stage? Well, I mean, the obvious one is you put the person with the most, I would say, pelts on the wall, the one that has accomplished the most, the one that is arguably the greatest coach that the sport has ever seen, he has got to get one of those votes. So I don't want to hear anybody crying about the way that the voting process is handled or who is voting for it or there are not enough players or, you know, why the process changed. All of this nonsense that you've seen over the last day and a half since this news got like leaked out there. And listen, Belichick was reportedly, you know, befuddled, a little chagrined, and he has a great healthy respect for the game, a great healthy respect for the Hall of Fame, great healthy respect for what professional football has meant. And listen, this... today's Bill Belichick is not what we all appreciated with his days up in New England. You know, now he's almost become like an SNL skit down in North Carolina. But when he was at his peak, when he was at his best, undeniably, his impact on the sport is unquestioned. And now you get to the Hall of Fame itself. And listen, I think I used to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame vote a little bit more than the other ones, whether it be hockey, whether it be basketball. I've been to up in Massachusetts, the Basketball Hall of Fame. And great fan. If you're, you know, love sports, it's something you should go out there and visit. I've not been to Canton. I've not been to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Obviously been up to Cooperstown as a young kid and, you know, as an adult as well, and got up there and enjoyed the Baseball Hall of Fame. But the Baseball Hall of Fame used to be a little bit different, separate itself from everybody else. It really did. Because, you know, in Major League Baseball, the stats... when I was growing up, when you used to crack open the old baseball encyclopedia, dating myself, when everything wasn't online, right? When you used to compare eras and different baseball players, the Baseball Hall of Fame was different because you knew the stats, right? You knew DiMaggio's hitting streak. You knew the all-time home run record. You knew how many, you know, Ted Williams, what he was able to do. You knew the hit record that was held by Ty Cobb that was broken by Pete Rose. Like, you knew all of these things as a baseball fan because the numbers meant something more than it did per se, say, from, you know, the National Football League or professional football, more than it did, say, in hockey, even though Gretzky's statistics were just off the charts when you're looking at what he did early days with the Edmonton Oilers. And obviously more than what you saw in the NBA, even though you had a healthy respect for Oscar and what he was able to do in the triple-double. You know, but baseball was different. It really was. Now, the steroid era obliterated it, right? And then Major League Baseball became, I would say, you know, two-faced in terms of the fact that baseball's popularity was brought back on the backs of steroid users. And then all of a sudden, when it was their day to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame, you know, everybody and their mother basically held their finger, pointed their finger at there and say, no, yeah, well, we appreciate what you did for the sport, but you're not going to have your day in this hall because you decided to use performance-enhancing drug. But that's a story of a different day. But I used to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame more than any other sport. But even now, with the fact that the steroid era has obliterated, you know, the record book, and that, you know, we're going through these days of who should get in and who shouldn't, and it's become maybe the Hall of Very Good. I've been a, you know, hard marker when it comes to the Hall of Fame, and I understand that it's a great honor if you've dedicated your life to a particular sport to get into it, but it should be for the Hall of the Truly Elite. That's what it should be. Not the Hall of Very Good. If you have to sit there and you have to debate for 20, 30 minutes with a buddy of yours, regardless of sport, about whether an individual is a Hall of Famer, then not really a Hall of Famer. I used to sit there with Mike and Chris, and they'd go through and, you know, whether a player in Major League Baseball is a compiler, whether he's a true Hall of Famer. Did he have 8, 9, 10 Hall of Fame years? What did he end up with home runs in Major League Baseball? How many RBIs? How many 300 seasons? How many career hits did he have? All of those things, right? What was his career slugging percentage? All the things that those at that point in time, right? But you could separate. When you watched a player, you say to yourself, yeah, no doubt. That player's a Hall of Famer. There was no debate. With Bill Belichick, there is no debate. He is a Hall of Famer, and when he doesn't get in, and there is a difference between being a first ballot Hall of Famer and a Hall of Famer, right? There is a difference. First ballot is not only the elite, but the truly special. Without a shadow of a doubt, there is no debate. There is no conversation. Shame on Bill Polian for getting into that meeting and reportedly going out there and arguing about the fact that there need to be a penance paid to Bill Belichick for Spygate and Deflategate. Are we going to run through the same rigmarole when Tom Brady is up for the Pro Football Hall of Fame because he was deflating his footballs up there in Foxborough to be able to have a little bit more accuracy when he was throwing the football, a little bit more command to be accurate and understand where he needs to go with his wide receiver? And was gaining a competitive edge at the time? Were you upset about the fact that, you know, the New England Patriots used to treat Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts like a redheaded stepchild? And that had to do with the fact that more in case of Peyton Manning, his inability to raise his game from what he was in the regular season to what he was in the playoffs, more so than anything else. And shame on any Hall of Fame voter that decided of the 50, you know, I don't want to hear about the process that decided not to put him in. And what it does do, it calls into question the validity of the hall itself and the process that has it played out. That's what it does. And has now made Bill Belichick a very, you know, sympathetic figure. Because I don't think there's any doubt. We could debate about what he has accomplished. Not what he has accomplished. You could debate whether or not he's likable or not. You could debate whether or not in a one-game scenario it would take one coach or another. You could never debate his accomplishments. I think the man coached in something of the nature of 17 championship games. He's won 8 Super Bowls. 2 as a, you know, defensive coordinator with the New York Giants. 6 as a coach. I mean, just remarkable stuff. An unbelievable accomplishments. And that has been the rage here. But in the end, it's not necessarily a case of, and nobody really has any sort of a take where, with any sort of strong foothold about the fact that, you know what, he didn't deserve or he should not have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. If you do, I mean, it's just idiotic. But we hear a lot of stuff that's said now in today's day and age that's idiot, that's, you know, it doesn't really make all that much sense. But that is just idiotic. But what it does do is that when you look at the whole process of itself, and it takes away the special nature of the building, of the hall itself. And that's why each and every member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame should be upset, regardless of you're a fan of Bill Belichick or not. Regardless of what you felt about Deflategate or Spygate, regardless of the way that he handled the media, regardless of, you know, how he handled certain scenarios, it doesn't matter. It's a matter of what he accomplished and what he did. He is not a product. I brought up the steroid users in Major League Baseball. You can make the argument that some, as an example, right? If you want to look at Deflategate and Spygate and say, well, you know, he needed to pay a greater penance than he did. Never really truly apologized like the commissioner Roger Goodell expected him to go out there and do, right? All the things that he would say. But here's where it would come down to, right? If you want to say, well, the steroid users, you know, they decided to cheat. They decided to make more money. They embarrassed themselves. They embarrassed the sport. They obliterated the record book. Well, yeah, and the owners and every other decision maker in Major League Baseball decided to turn a blind eye. But you can also make the argument that they were a product, right? Mark McGwire is a product of PEDs. Sammy Sosa is a product of PEDs. What's frustrating about guys like Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, they weren't, right? They were Hall of Fame caliber, God-given ability, talent, had the ability, were on the arc to make the Baseball Hall of Fame, but didn't and are being kept out because they got ticked off, whether it be Clemens got ticked off because Duquette called him fat up in Boston. He went to Toronto and basically decided to have rejuvenated career, or whether it be Barry Bonds, based on everything he read in that book with the Cream and the Clear and Victor Conti and everything out there in the Bay Area, that he grew very, very jealous of the popularity of Sosa and McGwire because he was not getting the pub, not getting the burn, not getting the heat that he deserved as being the best player in all of Major League Baseball. And decided to become Babe Ruth in his mid to late 30s. Bill Belichick was not that. See, there is a difference. He's not a product of cheating. Bill Belichick is brilliant. So when the debate goes on about him and we get into this process and everything that goes along with it, and you know, you could scream and holler till the from now until kingdom come. about whether or not, you know, this is that this is completely and utterly wrong. You can hop on TV, you can hop on radio, you can go on social media, you can do all that. Is the right take, and there's no other take that is just. But what it ultimately does do is it minimizes the accomplishment of the whole itself. When you don't have an individual of the caliber of Belichick getting in on the first ballot. When emotions come into play, when pettiness comes into play, when all of that. And that's where every single one of those voters that decided not to, and there were at least 11, because he didn't get 80% of the vote, well, shame on them. Because it minimizes your impact now moving forward and the accomplishment of the whole itself. And then you get to Eli Manning. And listen, Eli's an unbelievable giant, right? And, you know, I said it during the holidays. I was filling in on the midday show, you know, right before the start of the new year. And we got into a little bit of an, you know, an Eli conversation at the time. And because he was a finalist once again for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, I made the argument a year ago. And I get that this is not going to be a popular one. And I'm not coming on the airwaves this morning and going to tell you that Eli Manning is not a Pro Football Hall of Famer. I think he is. But I didn't think he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. And as we were talking about Bill Belichick, I do think there is a difference. And I get, historically speaking, not everybody that should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer got in. But that's besides the point. Two wrongs don't necessarily make a right. When you look at Eli Manning, I didn't think he was a pro. I didn't think he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. I didn't think he was a slam dunk. I appreciate everything he did covered. I mean, was around, whether it be off the air, on the air, watching what he was able to do as a New York Giant, watched his career arc here as a New York Giant. Greatly appreciate what he did in 2007 in that unbelievable run out there to Glendale, Arizona. I've always made the argument, and I'd stand true to it, that you could make the argument that that run by that Tom Coughlin-led team is arguably the greatest run that any team has ever had to winning a Super Bowl. To go on the road and to beat Tampa, Dallas, and Green Bay, and then beat the undefeated at the time, New England Patriots with Belichick and Brady out there in Glendale, Arizona, to decide to play it out toward the tail end of the season. If you go back, something that I was not for, and I was dead wrong at the time during the course of the regular season, but the momentum you were able to build off that, to go on the road, Tampa, Dallas, Green Bay, and in the cold, send Brett Favre into his initial retirement, and then beat Brady and Belichick out there in Glendale, Arizona. I don't think there's a greater run in the history of Super Bowl champions. And for Eli Manning, what Eli was as a quarterback is remarkably tough. You know, in order to be great, we always have the conversation, well, then you have to be available. And I don't think there's any question about it that Eli Manning was unbelievably available. And that added to his greatness. I also think there was a level where Eli Manning was able to, and I appreciate this in athletes. It really does. I think it's frustrating to watch guys that can perform at an extremely high level and then can't raise their level when it comes to the playoffs. Can't have their talent meet the moment when the moment becomes greater. And that's how we define players, especially in this great city, a city that I've had the privilege of working in throughout the course of my career. You define players by what they do in the playoffs. You really do. An inherent excuse is, well, he's a great regular season player. See, Peyton Manning was his brother was an unbelievable regular season player, was a player that in the regular season, there is no way that you would put Eli Manning and Peyton Manning in the same paragraph, no less the same chapter when it comes to impact at the quarterback position, because Peyton Manning changed the position for what he's able to do. He played at an exemplary level in the regular season. The issue with Peyton Manning was he was not able to take that level and raise it come the playoffs, come the NFL playoffs. And therefore, he had some really bad failures in the NFL postseason. See, what made Eli Manning really, really special was that, you know, Eli Manning was a very good regular season quarterback. I know the win total is 500 for his career, but, you know, there were other things that he had to overcome. There really was. Defense has given up leads late. He was great in the fourth quarter, but Eli Manning was able to raise his level come the NFL playoffs. And you saw that in 2007, 2011. The ability to escape the pass rush against the New England Patriots and make the throw to David Tyree and the helmet catch against Harrison and that New England Patriots secondary. The throw to Mario Manningham out in Indianapolis against the New England Patriots in 2011. I mean, he made some big-time throws. The toughness that he showed in the NFC Championship game against the San Francisco 49ers, where he got beat to, from now to kingdom come throughout the course of the day. I mean, it was just continued to get up and time again, the remarkable toughness that Eli Manning showed. With all of that, though, there's a greater appreciation, and he is an all-time great Giant. And I do think he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Do I think he was the best player on the field out there in Glendale, Arizona? I do not. I think the best player on the field, and I've interviewed him a number of times, and I've told this to him, and I think there will be a lot of people that were out there at that game that day who will tell you basically the same thing. The best player for the Giants, best player for any team out there in that initial Super Bowl was Justin Tuck. And if the MVPN becomes such a quarterback-driven award, and you took the emotion out of it, and I understand his ability to elude the pass rush and then throw the pass downfield to David Tyree, but was remarkable. It's become a quarterback-driven award. But that play symbolizes that victory. It really does. And it's one of the great Super Bowl, you know, throws, catch, elude the rush that you'll ever see. But best player on the field that day. And the reason why the Giants had a chance to win that game was because of their pass rush and how they were able to get after Tom Brady and beat up that Patriots offensive line. And the Giants' best defensive lineman that day was Justin Tuck. And he was the best player on the field. But even with that, Eli deserves the credit because the quarterback deserves blame when the teams lose, and they deserve a ton of credit. Eli's toughness made him remarkable. His two Super Bowl runs, his availability, his consecutive game streak, his ability to the fourth quarter comeback. He was done in, you know, the year that, you know, that Plaxico Burress shot himself. I mean, the Giants were, at that point in time, at the Latin Quarters, when that went down, I was on the airwaves on WFAN when that news came down, amazingly enough. But Giants, at that stage of the season, were the best team in the National Football League. They were. And that scenario basically, I mean, did the Giants in. But they were unbelievably dominant that year. With news coming out that Eli hasn't made the Hall of Fame yet again, it's surprising. When I was on the airwaves right around the holidays, I said I didn't think he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I thought Eli Manning would get in on the second ballot. But I think what we've learned here is that there's a greater appreciation for what Eli accomplished watching him on a year-in, year-out basis, game-in, game-out basis, if you've lived in this area, as compared to if you did not. And I understand why there's the debate against Eli Manning, whether you like it or not. I understand it. You know, I don't look at him as being this, you know, without a shadow of a doubt that, you know, if he was, that's why I didn't understand the uproar a year ago. I got it because of the emotion that comes into play and how loved he is and how beloved he is by Giant fans. But I think if you took the emotion out of it, you can understand why, you know, Eli Manning was not a first ballot Hall of Famer. You can't with Bill Belichick, but you can with Eli Manning. As far as not getting in on the second ballot, I think it's a case of, well, you know, we watched Eli here all the time. We watched his accomplishments. We watched his failures. We watched his defense let him down. We watched, you know, Plaxico let him down. We watched other things. But I think from the outside looking in, they look at Eli Manning and say, yeah, he was really good in the regular season. He had two epic runs. He also had a lot of failures. And he might get into the Hall of Fame, but the debate about Eli Manning, you know, there's more pushback than probably many initially thought. And I can understand it. I'm not telling you that I think it's right that he's not going to get in on the second ballot. I think Eli not getting in on the second ballot, I think Belichick provides a little bit more cover to it. But that becomes a little bit more of an intriguing story here, because the love that Giant fans have for Eli. I think he'll get in. I don't think there's any doubt. This is not him having to pay some sort of dopey penance. There was nothing him caught up with any kind of controversy. I think what it was is that the appreciation we have for Eli Manning, having watched him and what he was able to accomplish, I think if you take the emotions out of it, and if you didn't live in the tri-state area and you watched Eli Manning as a player, I think there's others that are involved in the voting process that look at Eli and say, I'm not so sure. And that's what makes it for a fun debate. It really does. Listen, he is... had a secondary career here with what he's doing with his brother and with Peyton and all the Manning productions, and it's been fantastic, right? The watch along on Monday Night Football, and Eli doesn't take himself too seriously and has showed himself to have a very, very funny other side to him. But he had a remarkable career as a New York Giant. When Tiki questioned his leadership ability on NBC, the Giants went out there that very season, went out and won a Super Bowl. Eli, there was always a case watching him when he was an NFL player that he was never his brother. But he was a ridiculously special New York Giant. He's an all-time great Giant, and he's beloved by Giant fans because of the success and the Super Bowl championships that defined him as a player. Was he perfect? No. Did he throw a lot of picks? Yes. Did he have an above 500 record during the course of as an NFL starting quarterback? He did not. He had two unbelievable runs, though. He did. He was better. He was, better than, he's very good in the regular season. His record should be better than what it ended up being. Those runs define him, define the Giant love that the Giants fan love that they have for the player. He doesn't get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And to me, it's another miss. Will he get in? He will. I thought he'd get in this year. I didn't think he'd get in last year. I thought Belichick, for no doubt, would get in on the first ballot. But now we get into this debate in terms of, in the end, when you look at the establishment itself and the Hall of Fame itself and the accomplishment itself, it doesn't shine it. It draws it more into question. And that's not an issue for you and me, because I'm not a Hall of Fame voter. But for those that do, well, shame on them. 1228, Melusis with you. 888-808-1019. That is your number to call. Back on the overnights for a night. Filling in for Al Fliegelman across the way, other side at the controls. You know the number to call. You can hit me up on social media, at Mark, M-A-R-C. That's X, you should say. M-A-R-C, M-A-L-U-S-I-S. Back with your calls and more. Plenty to chat about. We'll get into the Jets down in Florham Park. That is a complete utter embarrassment. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the Giants, their search for an offensive coordinator. Or if Temi Panarin probably playing his last game as a New York Ranger. The Knicks and Giannis, after their performance last night up in Toronto. We'll get into all that and more. Plenty of your phone calls as well. Mark Melusis back on the overnight on a Thursday morning right here. Where else? The Fan in New York.